So, you know, the panelists, you've heard their talks, as apart from Cornel Laskowski here from CMU. And as said, these are the questions, just a little bit to simulate discussion. But then you're more than welcome to either reply to these if you have any other opinion on those, or to come up with other questions. So the first question would be, what is the most promising approach that you can imagine so far towards dealing with audiovisual detection of non-linguistic vocal outbursts? So what is the most promising approach to this topic? Any of the panelists who would want to come forward? Other than that, I will just pass it to you.
Sure. This really isn't my area totally. My kind of PhD topic is a little bit to the side of this, but I think that's very important in this sort of non-linguistic, extra-linguistic sort of area of outbursts. I think that voice quality plays a very big role in it, and unfortunately a lot of the features that people have used for voice quality tend not to be robust enough, and that possibly is a reason why people don't use them enough. But I think that if more robust features that could measure different dimensions of voice quality, I think they could be beneficial to the recognition, perhaps. But I don't know. I'm naive. So
thank you, Daniel. Any opinion?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I think a lot can be done on the classification side, for example, with different fusion techniques. So right now we have seen early fusion and Stavros approach, but of course you could also fuse the different modalities for different classifiers in a late fusion approach and estimate the confidences for the different classifiers, because just for some problems when, for example, the visual modality does not deliver high confidence, you could decide on audio only or do something like this.
Thank you. So from the audio-visual part, maybe Stavros can comment.
Promising.
I don't know. I cannot see that. At the moment, I think there isn't anything that I could describe very promising. I mean, there are so many problems we haven't solved in vision. It's, of course, and the main problem, I think this is related more to the second question, is what we discussed before, was there is huge variability of expressions. And it's very, because usually machine learning problems, okay, you have different classes, but the variability isn't so high. Whereas in expressions, there is high variability because of the expression. There is variability because of head pose, head movements, and also variability because of different cultures. So this is a very challenging problem. And although there are several approaches, as for promising, I mean, I'm not sure what I can say. I mean, it's, I don't know.
Okay, so maybe any statement from the audience? Yes?
So, I mean, I'm asking myself, is what you say here, this localization and detection of this outburst, is that so much different from what we did so far in many other pattern recognition applications? For instance, I remember, let's say in the late 90s, so more than 10 years ago, we were working on broadcast news analysis, and we were using basically very similar methods for distinguishing between, let's say, speech, non-speech, music parts, and silence. And I'm really asking, maybe some of you, do you think there's so much a difference between what we did 10 years or 12 years ago for this kind of similar problem, or do you believe that now this kind of thing is giving you extremely new challenges which will lead to different approaches?
Thank you. So, who wants to? Cornel? Maybe you can.
I don't really know exactly what kinds of problems you're referring to. I'm sure that there are lots of problems that are similar to the problems that are being tackled these days, but I think it's fair to say that there are lots of new problems that were not considered in the 90s that people are looking at. That said, the problems that are in common I think people generally don't do the comparative studies to demonstrate what in fact is new about the new techniques. So sometimes the data goes away and sometimes the people that did the work go away, and there's not enough effort being put in to demonstrate that novel, new mathematical techniques are in fact worth doing. That's my opinion.
So maybe just to add on this, because you mentioned you don't know exactly what was done. I mean, what was done was kind of very similar to what you do today. People were basically training neural networks and on those classes, and then they were using sliding windows and were going over the streams, and then they were looking at the highest posterior probability and then assigned those segments to those different classes. And so that was my part of my motivation to say, well, it looked very similar to what is being done now, although it is a little bit different. We use maybe some different types of neural networks, but the difference is not so much, I think. That was my point, the motivation for my previous question, actually.
Thank you. So, further statement on that? Okay, so maybe we can move to the second question, which actually was, which are the problems, so which is very much similar to this. So are there any specific problems maybe in this context, and which are these? Anybody from the panel? Daniel?
Well, this is a general, very general question, but I think in emotion recognition, there some people have been studying how to do this cross-culturally, and for certain, some vocal outbursts are definitely common across cultures, but some are not. And I think more effort into this area could be you could actually gain some knowledge from doing this kind of tasks. Thank you.
I take this one. Yeah. In my view, I mean, I'm mostly doing speech, but as far as I can see and have seen, one of the organizational problems is that speech, as somebody has pointed out, is more developed than visual processing. Sites that claim to do multimodal processing normally are more on the video side than on the audio side. Of course, there's always exceptions. So video, in this case, is as far as it can be rather developed, and audio is less. So it might be one of the organizational problems, and that refers to funding and so on, to bring together the real specialists from both sides, and not just vision people doing some audio and vice versa. And my second remark refers to terminology that might seem to be a rather minor problem, but I tell you a story. I don't like this taxonomy into nonverbal and so on, and that's my story. Back in the 90s, in the German Wörmungbild project, we had the convention that filled pauses were conceived as non-linguistic stuff, like breathing and coughing and laughter and so on. So it was marked with these brackets. You can say, well, what's the problem? The problem was that the guys doing the implementing the ASR machine just treated all this as garbage and didn't take it into account. Later on, when the higher linguistic modules wanted to have a look and wanted to use hesitations, these guys from the ASR engine said, well, that's not in our project, we can't do it, we can't re-implement because this takes some weeks. So we had to do our own ASR, just because in the beginning it was defined as non-linguistic. You can say nowadays we are more intelligent, but I doubt it. So I think we really should take care for even for these problems that seem to be minor from the very beginning.
Thank you, Anton. Anybody or any comments maybe from the audience on problems in this respect? Yes.
Looks like most of the work has been done using facial expression, connecting facial expressions and the audio using a single speaker kind of scenario. I want to know if there is any work on like a meeting kind of scenario where you have many people and you have a camera just monitoring different people, and you have, so their facial expression is not very important, more like gestures and those kind of things correlated with this non-verbal cues.
So I'm looking at Cornell and Stavros from the meeting domain.
So actually, I didn't quite fully hear everything that you said in spite of the microphone. You asked how people working on meetings are dealing with the same problems that are being treated here. Is that... I don't know very much about it, but I can tell you that it leads to an explosion of sensors. So there's been quite a lot of projects, actually, at the EU level that have dealt with instrumenting meeting rooms and seminar rooms, etc. I find that research kind of exclusive because there's only a couple of people that can do research where, you know, the number of video cameras and the number of microphones that are necessary and that are fixed inside of a fixed geometry room are possible. So on the video side, I don't really know, but on the speech side, there's a lot of problems that are being tackled in essentially the same way as they're being dealt for the single side after, for example, beamforming the audio from a microphone array or a set of microphone arrays.
Yeah, the most works I have seen on meetings, basically what they do, if they want to use facial expressions, is they use one camera per participant. So they have one camera looking at the face of each participant. Now, if you want, in the scenario you mentioned, there is only one camera. As far as I know, there are some works, and I think there is a group in Switzerland, in EDAP, that they do gesture recognition or some, let's say, okay, not very sophisticated features because it's a very hard problem when you have only one camera. And in order to detect dominance, who is the most dominant person in a meeting and things like that. But yeah, I think I agree with you. I think there aren't many works using only one camera. And I think also Professor Nick Campbell has done some work on using this 360. We have one 360 camera on the table. And I think when he was in Japan, he did some work on that. But you're right, there aren't many works on that. And one of the reasons is that it's not easy, and you're not sure what features to extract, and there are so many problems. So, yeah.
Okay, so the next question would be then, how can we help to better integrate audio and video? How can we better fuse these? And that should be looked at from both sides, so from the video side, from the audio side. Anton had mentioned that there are these, well, gaps in between, looking at it from one side or the other side. So maybe there is some opinion on this. How can we best integrate audio and video in the future?
Maybe one possibility is that not to use both video and audio information for early or late fusion for the very same problem, but to look at the context and then try to adjust the priors for the phenomena I'm interested in. When I may come back to our data, it seems that if we are interested in these interactive verbal behavior, mother reasoning, and so on, then we can have a very coarse look at the body movements of the subjects, and when they're lively, then we can just reset the priors for the phenomena we are interested in. And this holds, of course, vice versa. Well, coming from speech, I mostly can imagine speech problems we are interested in, but it's the job of the vision guys to do it vice versa. So, I mean, that's maybe just another type of approach that that we can try to pursue. And my appendage told me that she had the same ideas coming from radio, so it might really be worthwhile.
Thank you. Stavros, maybe?
Okay, I think okay, it seems that the most popular approaches at the moment are decision fusion and feature level fusion. And also there are some also other approaches like multi-stream HMMs. But I think this is not only related to audio and video. I think fusion of different modalities, I think, is a hot topic. I mean, and as far as I know, these methods have been around for years, and it seems that nothing better has come out. So, and I guess people are trying to find better fusion methods. And obviously, for example, in feature-level fusion, okay, the simple way is just to match the frame rates between audio and video, which it's not guaranteed that this is the optimal way to do it. And so, yeah, there is. I think everyone agrees that there is need for new fusion methods. Now, what is this going to be? I don't think anyone knows the answer yet. I mean, but I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people who work on fusion and fusion of different modalities. So let's hope at some point there will be something better than these approaches. I don't know. Yeah, of course. I mean, in all these cases, there is an application. I think, for example, I think I've seen some papers on tracking that they use information from, from cameras, from radar, and they try to combine different information. Yeah, definitely. Without an application, I mean, you don't say.
There's some interesting work that, I mean, yeah, I had the question about meetings and what not handled that the MIT media lab does some interesting work. Which is, I think it was fairly rudimentary tracking technology. People are wearing wristbands and whatnot, but it's fairly easy to track. And with that information, you can determine whether a team was very successful as a team in the meeting. And all it, what it boiled down to was very short bursts of encouraging statements that people would make and gestures. So you don't need to have an exact knowledge of what it is they're saying, as long as you know what the meaning and the sense is. Right? So it's important to determine what the ecology is of the space that you need to understand. And from that, you can then start to reason about what is it that I need to use. And without any of that, when it boils down to hopefully technical exercise, but what is the worst of that?
No, I agree with that. I mean, it's... I agree because you definitely need an application, and depending on the application, and you can see what's the most appropriate way. I mean, I was talking, without application, yeah, what's the point of fusing things for doing what? I mean,
so, actually, that was the fourth and last question on this slide. What applications do you see for all these types of non-linguistic vocalizations or vocal outbursts? So maybe you could each of you pass the microphone and tell your non-linguistic vocalization application. I start with you.
Prediction of incipient behavior in real time.
I improved spoken dialogue systems, particularly improved speech synthesis, if appropriate units, not just non-linguistic, but also short utterances like idelphinous. If any unit selection, large corpus unit selection synthesis, if you can track the right type of yeah or other short outburst, that can might provide more fluid synthetic speech or conversation.
I think this guy told everything.
Yeah, from my point of view, an interesting point of application is personality analysis, for example, assessment of leadership qualities. For instance, you could think of if someone is making a lot of hesitations, he's probably not a good speaker. And yeah, such classifications could be quite interesting.
Okay, at least in our group, I mean, the main goal was to have more user-friendly interfaces. So that's why we were mostly concentrated on laughter, but also on other vocalization. Because, for example, when you interact with an interface, and if it can detect that you laugh, then this is usually means that you are happy. I mean, you enjoy yourself. Of course, it can have a different meaning. It can be it can mean irony. It's at the moment, I think it's very hard to discriminate between these two types. But for us, it's just to make the communication more user-friendly. Because if it's just speech, it's... I think if you take an example of interaction between two people and you remove all these non-linguistic vocalizations, you will see the interaction, it does not seem so natural. So our idea was to have more... Our more motivation was to have more user-friendly interfaces, and that's how we began to work on this area. So.
I think we could aim at not only assessing or monitoring personality, but assessing and monitoring changes in personality over certain times. I mean, just imagine when we come back to this leadership topic, somebody taking part in a management course, and then at the beginning and at the end, we assess personality and have a look whether changes took place. The same holds for any interactive behavior, can be extended to children or pathological behavior and stuff like that. But not single instance judgments, because that's too erroneous, but just accumulation of knowledge.
A question. So we've heard about the dangers of using, well, of setting things like these aside from linguistic stuff from Anton. And out of these dream applications, 5.5, I think, were linguistic in nature and has to do with speech and spoken interaction. What is the benefit of using terminology like non-linguistic stuff for these things?
Me? You were making the point.
I think that, I mean, from my point of view, I think that's mostly a programmatic question. It's just that linguistic things have dominated this community's general interests for a long time. And to actually get something going that's non-linguistic, you just need to exert a lot of effort and sound like a person that actually wants to disintegrate it from linguistics. But I don't think that's the general aim. I think that's just my opinion.
Yeah, we totally agree with that. And think probably that's the future, to have it combined, linguistics and non-linguistics, apart from audio and video. By this, we actually reached the end of the session in terms of time. And I would like to thank you all very, very much, the speakers, all of the audience, and, well, hope that we have more fruitful discussion in the future. Thank you.